Welcome to episode number 182.
It's time for the RV Podcast. Traveling North America in an RV. Exploring, camping, boondocking, embracing the RV lifestyle, and sharing tips and where to go and how to keep things running right. Here's award-winning journalist Mike Wendland and his network of RV reporters.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the 182nd episode of the RV Podcast. My name is Mike Wendland, and you are very welcome here. No matter what kind of an RV you have, whether it's a motorhome, a towable trailer, a tent, even if you are just dreaming about getting an RV someday, this podcast is for you, because here we talk about getting out there, enjoying God's amazing creation, meeting fun people, boondocking, discovering interesting places, and of course, using the right gear and tech to enhance our RV lifestyle. So, welcome aboard. We're honored that you chose to put us in your ears this week. Well, there is a good news, bad news story about our national parks that you need to know about. Every RVer has national parks on their bucket list, and I would bet that the vast majority of us, as we begin our 2018 travel season this year, are planning a visit to a national park. Well, the good news is that the parks have never been more popular. Attendance continues at all-time highs, and that is good. Unfortunately, though, the bad news part of this story is so bad that it is literally jeopardizing our much-loved national parks. Devastating budget cutbacks, staff reductions, backlogged maintenance, and indifferent congressional inaction have created a crisis that could result in partial shutdowns at many of our parks. Now, we're going to talk to an expert in our interview section a little later on, and she'll explain the problem as well as what you can do to help. Also this week, we have lots of travel advice. We've got RV and tech tips and another great off-the-beaten-path report about a place that you will want to visit. But first, my lifelong traveling companion and my bride, Jennifer. Hello, my dear.
Hello, Michael.
Can you believe it's March? We're in March already. March 2018. Where's the time going?
I don't know, but it keeps going by faster, that's for sure.
And we are in the midst of planning a trip to
Texas.
Texas. We are looking at hugging the Gulf Shore all the way down through Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, and then enter Texas. And eventually we're going to head up towards Waco and the wide open spaces south of San Antonio, someplace there. We don't know what to call this thing. We're kind of calling it our barbecue and blue bonnets tour, as we're going to be looking for some good Texas barbecue, maybe a little Tex-Mex mixed in with it. And then we want to take in that magnificent display of the blooming bluebonnet, wildflowers that turn the hill country into carpets of blue every spring.
Well, I got to say that I can't wait to go see the bluebonnets.
Now, the bluebonnets have started to bloom early this year, and we're counting on that. The normal peak time is really closer to the 1st of April, but they tell me they're starting off pretty early, and we're going to, the way it works out is we can't stick around till April out there. We've got some other stuff we have to do, so we are going to take off next week and make our way there. And we are looking for suggestions. You can suggest what, you know, those of you know, we're going to follow kind of I-10 through Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, and then get into Texas. Let us know what we ought to see along the way. Eventually, when we get up to Waco, we're going to mess around there a couple of days. We're meeting some various listeners and readers of our blog and podcast, and we're going to have a good time. I think this will be fun.
I know it's going to be fun.
Yeah, I think this will be a nice trip. We always have wanted to spend some more time in Texas, and who knows, lots of people there.
And aren't we considering an impromptu meeting up on Sunday, March 18th, somewhere near Waco?
Yep, we should be near Waco, and we've done this a couple of times in our travel, and it depends on whether we hear from enough people who are interested in coming and meeting us and spending a few hours on a Sunday afternoon. So we're looking at Sunday, March 18th. We should be either in Waco or just a little north of there. And if we can get enough people interested, we'll let you know. And in next week's podcast, we'll set the time. We'll post this on our Facebook group too. But, you know, we can all hang out, bring out our chairs, sit around, look, talk, get to meet each other. And those are always fun, those impromptu ones. I'm amazed sometimes at how many people show up.
If just two people show up, that's great.
Yes.
Or if 20 show up.
So we'll let you know on next week's podcast and on our on the Facebook group, which is Road Trekking the Group on Facebook. We'll let you know if we firm that up. We're not sure when we're going to leave. Whether we're going to leave Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday of next week. But that's where we're heading. Heading from Florida. That's where we are now. Still on the Emerald Coast. That's where we are right
now. Our winter travel base.
That's it. And we've spent the last week pretty much catching up, doing some video editing for our RV Lifestyle channel on YouTube. We've had a couple of new videos up in the last week. If you are not familiar with that, can I send you over there? Go over to RVLifestyleChannel.com. It will take you directly to our YouTube page, and we'd like you over there.
And we're trying to plan our spring and summer travel schedule. It's amazing how two things seem to always happen at once, two opportunities. There's just so many places to go and so little time.
There is. We are pretty excited about some of the stuff that we know about. We've got our big gathering in Glacier National Park in June. That's our major road trekking RV lifestyle gathering every year. We're doing six or seven this year. That's the big one. And we, because of you, my dear, are opening that up. We have more people than normal. Normally, we keep our gatherings to about 30 rigs, about 50 people. And I heard Jan Seiner say the other day that we've got almost 150 people coming to this.
I know. It's all my fault, too, because I got so excited. Last year, we were having so much fun, and the campground was so large. I said, we could accommodate more people.
Yeah, I think your exact words are, the more, the merrier.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we opened it up.
I sure hope everybody comes and everybody has a really, really good time.
That's in June, and we'll be doing that. We've got, I think that's pretty much all sold out. It's something else that's coming up. We've got a big gathering in Sonoma, and I think there's some gatherings there in May. There's still some openings for that gathering. We were going to go to Sonoma, and we can't make it because it's too close to something else that I don't think we've talked about on the show.
I don't think we have.
And I don't have a lot of details, but I might as well let you know they're coming. And if you're interested in this, just stay tuned because we'll try and get more information. But we've been invited by the people, by the Irwin Heimer Group of North America and the people who make Road Trek Rotor Homes. They are going to have owner classes, owner school. Think of that as RV owner school. The Road Trek is going to do one in May, one in July, and one in August. And we will be part of the team that's presenting information. Jennifer and I are going to spend some time. We'll give you some travel tips and ideas. But they're going to teach you how, all sorts of stuff about your RV. And for those of you who own Road Treks, want to know more about solar and Volt Start and all their cool e-trek features, they'll be talking about that, as well as how to use the macerator and, I don't know, the electrical system, much more. So owner school, I don't know if they have a better name for it, but that's kind of what it is. And I don't know how many they can have. I think there's a campground nearby that everybody will be hanging out with, and it's I think it's 3 days. Each session is 3 days, if I'm not mistaken. But May, July, and August. And I don't have all the dates to share with you now, but I'm going to put that in your calendar. You might drop us a note if you think you're interested in that, and I can refer you to the right people. And as soon as we get the info, we'll tell you about that. So we're excited about that. That's what we're going to do, among other things, with our road trekking RV lifestyle gatherings around the country. And then, you know, we've got little travel things that we like to do, just the two of us, or the three of us, with our dog, Bo, and we'll have some fun.
Yeah, we're debating right now whether Bo gets to come to Glacier or not.
Yeah, because
we didn't take him last year, and it worked out really well.
It did, because it's a national park, and pets are not very welcome in national parks, and we do a lot of hiking, and it's just difficult, so we may not be bringing Bo on that trip. I better not tell him, because he's going to get pretty mad. Should I tell him? No, you tell him. You can tell him. We had some fun with Bo, by the way. I found an app for my phone. It's called My Talking Pet. You can get it, I think, for Android or iPhone. My Talking Pet's the app. And you basically take a picture of your dog, and then you can adjust it, and you can make your dog talk. you can record a little message and the dog's mouth will move, and it's pretty fun. So you can go to that. Anyway, that's our Facebook group have seen that. We put that up there to show them us. I had a lot of time on my hands yesterday, and I did that. But anyway,
hey, you get paid for doing that. That was for NBC.
Yeah, that was actually my NBC piece that I did that for. So it was pretty fun. Okay, let's see. What do we got this week? First thing is National Park. We're going to talk a lot about that in the interview. We've got a great interview about the problems of backlog maintenance and neglect and cutbacks at national parks, but the numbers are in, and the number of visitors for 2017 was huge. It was almost identical to the record-setting visitor count in 2016, 330,000, almost 331,000 people both years, and some of the parks actually broke attendance records because of the solar eclipse back in August of last year. But overall, national park records show visitors are staying in the park longer, and the popularity continues to grow. We'll talk more about the downside to that story in our interview of the week and what we can do about it. But lots of information on national parks.
Speaking of national parks, ever wonder what the top 10 most visited national parks are?
Yes, yes. Let's do the top five because the top 10 will take us too long. What's the first one?
The first one is the Great Smoky Mountains National Park, 11.39 million.
You know, I think that's every year. I think they're their first part.
Yeah, they are, aren't they?
Yeah.
I think where they're located on the East Coast.
Yeah, well, yeah, you know, right down the, on kind of the Eastern Seaboard. Not
right.
The Eastern Seaboard. They're in from that a little bit.
But, you know.
Yeah, accessible for the East Coast, and I think that's probably why. If you've ever driven, you know, through Gatlinburg, you know it's so crowded because it's traffic jams constantly every summer long. But that's a big park.
And then what you would expect, the second one is Grand Canyon National Park with 6.25 million.
But isn't that interesting? It's almost half as many as go to the Great Smoky Mountains. And yet Grand Canyon, which is not quite as close to those major population areas as Great Smoky, has 6.25. So almost half. Less, not quite, but almost half less. And then what's next?
Zion National Park, 4.5 million.
Boy, we love Zion, but remember the last time we were there, how crowded it was?
It was hot.
It was hot, and if it wasn't for those buses, I mean, there's no place to park as you travel around there. You have to take their buses to go to the various hiking spots and the scenic spots because it's not that big of a national park, but it's so spectacular.
And the buses worked so efficiently.
Yeah, they did. I didn't think I'd like that, but and we stayed right in their campground, and that was very nice. So Zion's number three, 4.5 million. What's fourth?
Rocky Mountain National Park, 4.44 million.
Yeah, that's another beautiful park. Big park in great vistas as you can drive. I think most RVs, maybe not a Class A, can drive right on up through there, and you can get some pretty good height up there. What's fifth?
Yosemite National Park, 4.34 million.
Out in California.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised Yellowstone isn't in those top five.
Well, Yellowstone's number six.
All right. Well, let's go the whole list, because Yellowstone's number six. How many did they have?
Yellowstone, 4.12 million.
Wow. That's a lot. Yellowstone's crowded? What, okay.
And then Acadia National Park, 3.51 million.
Up in Maine, yeah.
And Olympic National Park, 3.4 million.
Up in the Pacific Northwest.
And the Grand Teton National Park, 3.32 million.
That's funny because it's right next to Yellowstone, Grand Teton. So, and you'd think that if you go to Grand Teton, you go right up to Yellowstone because they border each other. And
They spend all their time at Yellowstone.
Yeah, yeah, they
don't
probably
allow
do.
Allow time.
And then what's number 10?
Last but not least, Glacier National Park, 3.31 million.
So those are the top 10 of all the national parks, and I hope you get a chance to visit one. And again, please stay tuned for our interview section coming up in a little bit, because if you love our national parks as we do, there's an underlying problem that has been neglected too long, and maybe we can get involved and help with that. Another story that made the news this week is the continuing RV industry boom. The RV industry is on fire. The latest survey of manufacturers tracked by the Recreation Vehicle Industry Association shows January was the best on record for RV sales. A survey of manufacturers found RV wholesale shipments up, 25.3%. That is huge. Way up over last year, which was also a record year. Towable RVs up, reporting an increase of 26%. That's pretty amazing. So RV industry is on the boom.
And then if you're planning to be anywhere near central Nebraska this month, if so, be sure not to miss the great sandhill crane migration. Each year, about 500,000, 600,000 of the beautiful birds standing roughly 4 feet tall with 6 foot wingspans pass through Nebraska's Platte River Valley region on their way north. And some estimate 80% of the bird population passes through this area this month, attracting thousands of visitors. Does that make you want to go? Thousands of visitors?
Well, not the thousands of visitors, but sandhill cranes are pretty neat.
They're very neat. And the migration typically runs all of March, peaking mid to late month, and early into April.
All right. We'll put a couple of links up to more information on the sandhill cranes, and as well as the RV sales and all the stats on the national parks you can find on the show notes for this episode, which you can find at roadtrekking.com/182. This portion of the podcast brought to you by Campers Inn, the RVer's trusted resource for over 50 years and the nation's largest family-operated RV dealership, now with 19 locations and still expanding. Campers Inn offers rock-bottom deals on motorhomes and fifth wheels and towables of all different kinds at all of their locations. Campers Inn is proud to announce they have 19 locations in the eastern U.S., their newest store in Ocala, Florida, and in Acworth, Georgia, and Thornburg, Virginia. If you live nearby any of those stores or just passing through, stop in. They would love to see you. Campers Inn, you know, we talk about this every week in the podcast. One of the neatest things about Campers Inn is something they've done that's very unique to the industry is they have become, they've known for the integrity pricing guarantee. And what that means is no blindsiding prices. That means that all the quotes that you get for new RVs at Campers Inn, at any of their 19 locations, include everything. Freight, orientation, detailing, prep. So when you go to buy it and bring out the checkbook, you're not going to be surprised by hidden upcharges and fees, which happens at some dealerships, not at Campers Inn. Integrity pricing all the time. You will never be surprised. They sell motorhomes and travel trailers from industry's leading manufacturers like Tiffin, Grand Design, Coachman, Thor, their own exclusives like the Gulfstream Friendship and the Cruiser Embrace. They have award-winning RV sales and service, hundreds of RVs always at the best prices with certified and trained service personnel. Campers Inn, tell them you heard about them on the RV podcast.
Is it a gadget, a recipe, a tip? Whatever she has in store for us, it promises to make the RV lifestyle a little more fun or efficient. Here's Jennifer with her RV tip of the week.
One of the things about having a house on wheels is, well, it's on wheels. That means your home is constantly moving from one great camping location to another, causing the items in your refrigerator to move around as well. I can't tell you how many times I've opened the door of our RV refrigerator after settling into a new spot for the night, and a cup of yogurt or a carton of some other item slides out, having shifted during our time on the road. Recently, I came across something I'm anxious to try. It's a spring-loaded suspension bar that is designed to hold your food items in place when you travel. The bar reminds me of the suspension curtain rods many people use over their bathtub showers, only these are double rods designed to fit across an RV refrigerator and hold everything on its shelf. Manufactured by Camco, their price is $5.15. I just found them at Home Depot, Amazon, and several other retailers. I am planning to order some for myself to see how they work. We'll have a link to them on Amazon. Meanwhile, be sure to send me your tips and suggestions for the RV lifestyle. You can use the leave voicemail link at roadtrekking.com. Just click it and then use the built-in microphone on your computer or mobile device to record a message to me. You can do it over as many times as you want until you're satisfied. And then you just click a button and it comes right to my email inbox. And I love hearing from you.
Jennifer's tip of the week is brought to you by Rad Power Bikes, an electric bike manufacturer offering direct to consumer pricing. You can buy a Rad Power Bike for about half of what you'd pay for comparable bikes that you have to go through the regular retail store. You don't have to do that at Rad Power Bikes. They sell directly to you. They even give you free shipping. Now, we have just picked up in the last month or so Rad Power Bikes for ourselves. I've got, we both have the city model, but Jennifer has the step-through version, which means she can kind of just step through. It's kind of like what we used to call a girl's bike. You don't have to swing your leg over a crossbar or anything like that. And mine is kind of the traditional beach cruiser style. Both of them have been so much fun. And we have shared a lot. There's a YouTube video that we have up on them. And everybody who's seen them, we've been given lots of rides as we've traveled around the country so far with them. In fact, I hate to even tell people we're coming because we don't even get to ride our bikes themselves. Everybody wants to ride them. But they're really fun. Rad Power Bikes makes four different bike models. And they are all 750 watts of power, which is the most powerful motor that an e-bike can have while maintaining a street legal status, which means you don't have to have a license. You can ride it anywhere. You can ride a bicycle. All four models can reach 20 miles per hour with zero pedaling. Now, you can also pedal yourself, and it will give you a pedal assist at whatever level you'd like, a whole lot or just a tiny little bit. Or if you want, you can completely bypass the motor and just do all the pedaling yourselves. You can go between 20 and 45 miles on a single charge, depending on how much pedaling you do. And these units, like I say, will go 20 miles per hour with zero pedaling. And the nice thing about having Rad Power Bikes as a sponsor is that if you buy from them and you use the promo code ROADTREKKING at checkout, besides free shipping, you will get $75 off. You can see our Rad Power Bikes on our, we'll put a link on the show notes for this episode to a YouTube video that we did on them, but check them out yourself if you want, radpowerbikes.com, and tell them you heard about them on the RV Podcast.
Questions? You've got them. Mike and his network of RV reporters have the answers. Here's one of our questions of the week.
Hello, Mike and Jennifer. My name's Chuck. I live in northern Indiana. My wife and I are planning a trip to Glacier National Park, and I wondered what route you took from Michigan going out. What were the must-see stops along the way? And did you take the same route back? We really enjoy your podcasts and videos and look forward to them every week. Thank you, guys.
Well, thanks, Chuck. I don't know if you're going out for our Road Trekking RV Lifestyle Gathering in June or if you're doing a trip on your own, but hopefully it's ours because we'd love to meet them. That's always fine. Well, there are essentially
two main routes.
Yeah, well, there's three if you want to take a two-lane, but we can talk about that, I guess, later. But the first one is our good friends right across
the Interstate 90 from Chicago all the way through to Montana.
That's where you would then make your way north and east. We had a great time. Now, a lot of people think that's a boring drive. It's a long drive, but we like South Dakota. It drives right through the heart of South Dakota. And in fact, we like it so much, and we've heard so many people say, oh, South Dakota was so boring. It's not boring. We did a video, and we had a great time on that
video.
We
did a video on five of our favorite spots to stop in South Dakota along I-90.
Yep, and that video was so much fun to do. We even got dressed up as a cowboy and a saloon girl. Mm-hmm. You made a fine-looking saloon girl.
I had the wrong hat.
You had the wrong hat?
Yeah.
Anyway, you got to check that video out. There's lots of little places to stop, and we urge you to think about that. Now, you could stop on the way back, but that's the quickest, I think, way for you in Indiana is just get on 90 and head that straight out. Now, when you get to Montana, you got lots of decisions to make because you got to get quite a bit north and somewhat west to get to Glacier. But there's another route, which is north of I-90 by a couple, 3 hours. It's a pretty popular route. It's very fast.
And it's I-94, and you can take that from Chicago, too. How do a more northerly route.
Yeah. It goes through, you kind of drive 90 and 94 for a while, and then 94 takes over.
But then you go through North Dakota.
North Dakota. And again, we had a great time in North Dakota. We especially, we did a great little side trip in North Dakota.
Ooh, I'll never forget that. The Enchanted Highway. That was fun.
Yep. And there's a video on it that we'll put with the show notes for this episode for you, Chuck. You can go check on that. But a great side trip is the Enchanted Highway. And you can find that there pretty
cool. Oh, yeah.
Cool.
And then when you're in Montana, make sure you stop and see the underground city.
Oh, yeah. And Hover. Yeah. Well, that's a different route because when you take 94, you'll follow that again to the Montana border. But then right after you cross over the Montana border, you head north again and you cut through some two lanes. It's a really fun ride. We got some beautiful pictures. We stopped and messed around at a reservoir out there. And then you pick up US 2. And US 2 is a two-lane highway. It's just south of the Canadian border and it runs east-west. And it will take you then west directly into Glacier. They call that the Highline Country, and it's a lot of fun. We really enjoyed that ride too. So you have those two routes, 94 and 90, but there is also a route with US 2. So US 2 would take you if you want to have. It's a lot slower because it's a two lane, but you could go straight north. You could even, if you're in Indiana, you could go up the West Michigan highway, go up the western coast of Michigan, up into the Upper Peninsula, pick up US 2, and then head west on US 2 through Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and then all the way into North Dakota, and then Montana. And that is a fun ride, that US 2. So you have three routes, two major routes, and a third one. I would always suggest doing one route out and one route back, and I think you'd have fun. But we enjoyed that ride, didn't we?
Yeah, we have. We've enjoyed all three.
Now, I don't know. Which way do you want to go out this year? We can go 90. Some people go 80. There's another route, I guess, that could add this. This is kind of out of your way, but if you want to go through Nebraska, and there's a couple of neat areas there, like the Nebraska Sandhills. You love those.
Yes.
That was really fun. You can go through Nebraska on route Interstate 80, and that will eventually take you to Wyoming, and then you can make your way from Wyoming into Montana and up that way. But probably the quickest for you, I think, is 90, but quick is not always the best, Chuck. So hopefully that gave you some ideas. If you go to the show notes for this episode, we have links to all the videos that we did along the way, and that'll give you an idea and help you plan your trip a little. Just go to roadtrekking.com/182, scroll down to the questions of the week, and you'll find this there. But Chuck, I hope we see you out there in June when we're all out there in Glacier.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
I wonder if we can leave a little earlier, because we had so much fun going out and coming back, because we did stop at different spots along the way and took our time. And we vowed we would do that again. We would take our time, but maybe we'll find another different route. We'll still look. So there you go. Hey, we got an interesting call from a listener named Kevin. And Kevin wasn't sure how to file this little report he gave us, whether it's a commentary. That's kind of what we'd call it. But as we listen to it, Kevin delivers, I think, a really powerful message that everybody needs to hear. It's a happy ending. For those of you who say, oh, we're going to just wait until we do all that stuff, Kevin has a story with a lesson. Don't wait. Again, it has a happy ending, but you need to hear this yourself. So let's bring Kevin on.
Hi, Mike and Jennifer. This is Kevin in Nashville calling in with, I'm not sure what you want to call this. It's not really an off-the-beaten-path report, maybe a tip, maybe just unsolicited advice for everyone. But let me just tell you my story and see what you think. In 2016, I was scheduled to attend the annual Supercomputing Conference, which is held each November, and in 2016 it was going to be in Salt Lake City. My work was kind enough to allow me to wrap some vacation around it, so my wife Lisa and I planned a nice trip out I-40 West and angling up to Salt Lake City. We were scheduled to leave early in the morning on Saturday, November 5th. The Monday prior, Halloween, my wife went to her doctor for a routine visit that turned into anything but routine. Go across the street, have a test. Go have a biopsy the next day. And late on Thursday afternoon, About 36 hours before we were scheduled to leave, came the word, you have cancer. We asked the doctors what we should do. We checked, and the next step was surgery, but we couldn't even meet with the surgeon until a few days before we were scheduled to be back from the trip. So we asked the doctors, well, is there any reason for us to not take this trip? And their response was, well, if psychologically you can, then yeah, go for it. There's no medical reason not to. So we decided to go ahead and take the trip, and it was one of the best decisions we ever made. Everything meant more to us on that trip. We left, headed out I-40 West, and as we crossed over one of the rivers, we saw a bald eagle flying beside us. Never before and never since in all the times we traveled that stretch of road have we seen a bald eagle there. When we got to New Mexico, one of our favorite places in the world, we did things we'd never done before, like stop at Ghost Ranch, a place we'd driven by many times but never stopped, and it was calming and peaceful. When we got to Salt Lake City, we stayed at a KOA in downtown Salt Lake City that was only 3 miles from where the supercomputing conference was being held. There was even light rail between the conference center and the KOA. On our way back, we went down to New Mexico again and went to a place that I do intend to call in an off-the-beaten-path report about sometime in the future, Bosque del Apache National Wildlife Refuge. And we saw the Festival of the Cranes. When we left New Mexico, my wife actually cried because she didn't know what the future was going to hold. Now, the story does have a happy ending. When we got home, we met with the surgeon. She had surgery a few days after Christmas, actually, and they were able to get all of the cancer, and she's doing great. So, I guess this is just a, if you're ever in doubt, go. It was one of the best things we ever did, and I think it would be one of the best things that anyone can do, is to just go. Enjoy time. Enjoy life, because you don't know what tomorrow brings.
Mm. What a great story, Kevin. Thank you for calling that in. Isn't that a great lesson?
It is. We all need to hear that.
Mm. Kevin, we were traveling with you as you shared that story with us, and I know that there are people listening to this podcast right now in similar shoes that you and your wife were in when you decided to make that trip. And your idea about, do it now. Enjoy every moment, because it's a gift, and we do not know what tomorrow brings. Kevin, thank you very much for phoning that in, and I know our audience appreciates that too. Sponsoring this part of the podcast is Van City RV. Van City RV brings you this incredible inventory of Class B RVs. They specialize in Class Bs, and they have locations now across the country in St. Louis, Missouri, in Las Vegas, Nevada, in Kalispell, Montana, and Colorado Springs, Colorado. And they're all about the American dream, helping deliver that dream of getting out there and enjoying this beautiful land to families across the nation. They've been doing that since 1970. Jennifer and I have visited Van City RV. We've met the staff. We've heard from many of our listeners over the years who've described their experience with phrases like, we were treated like royalty at Van City. All four Van City RVs have a buy and a fly program, which means you can fly into the airport nearest the Van City RV dealership you pick. Your new RV will be waiting for you. You'll get five-star treatment to the airport. $500 towards your airfare, and your new RV is fully prepped for travel. They'll give you a complete orientation. And here's what they do that's really cool. They then set you up in a local campground. And you are set up just like a veteran RVer. And that way, for a couple of days, you are in your RV, actually living the lifestyle. And if you have any questions, they're right close by, and they are there to answer them in person or by phone. First-class service at Van City RV and first-class deals. Here's our pal Dan the Van Man with what's happening now.
Thanks, Mike. Well, spring's around the corner. We'd like to invite everybody by Van City RV of St. Louis. April 5th through the 7th for a spring open house show. You come by and talk to the reps, check out all the new features, along with the auto gen start systems on your Pleasureways and Coachman Gallerias, and the new E-Trek and CS Adventurous with the E-Options. So give us a call today at 1-800-467-3905 or check us out at VanCityRV.com.
You're listening to the RV Podcast.
You can find show notes, links to resources and websites Mike and his guests mention,
and background material, videos and photos on the RVPodcast.com travel blog.
And you can also send Mike a voice question to answer on the podcast.
Just click the send voicemail button on RV Podcast.
Well, there is, as we said at the very top of the program, good news and bad news about our national parks, and you need to know both stories. The good news, as we shared early on in the program, is how well the attendance is, that the parks are more popular than ever. People are spending more time in them. But the bad news is that they have been neglected, seriously neglected, so badly that our much-loved national parks are in jeopardy. Because of budget cutbacks, because of staff reductions, maintenance that has been backlogged and it just isn't being done. And all this is caused by indifferent congressional inaction. They aren't doing anything about it. So it's a crisis. And the bottom line is some of those parks could result in partial shutdowns because stuff isn't getting done and there's not enough people to help. Well, to help us out and understand what's going on and find out what we can do about it, our guest in this podcast is Emily Dowse. She is the Director of Budget and Appropriations for the Government Affairs Team of the National Parks Conservation Association. In that role, she advocates for additional funding for the national parks, both through appropriations and supplementary sources. And she leads the National Parks Second Century Action Coalition, which is made up of travel and tourism, outdoor industry, and historic preservation groups to advocate for additional park funding with Congress and the administration. She has an MS in Environmental Resource Policy from the George Washington University and a BS from Texas A&M University. Prior to working at the National Parks Conservation Authority, she worked at a Marine Conservation Institute on ocean conservation issues. So she knows what she's talking about. And Emily Dowse joins us right now. Thank you very much, Ms. Dowse. I appreciate you being with us on the phone. Our folks have noticed, you can't help but notice as you travel around this country, there's something wrong with our national parks. Can you give us that overview of what the problem has been?
Sure. Thanks for having me on. You know, our national parks are quite fantastic, and but they do have some needs. You know, there's been a lot of talk about addressing the deferred maintenance backlog of our national park system, which was just updated to be $11.6 billion.
Whoa.
And there's a lot of needs in our parks. They've been around for a long time. Some of them have, Yellowstone, for instance, Yosemite and others. And they have a lot of visitors enjoying them. You know, record visitation last year and during the centennial year, and close to those numbers again in 2017. So, you know, it just takes wear and tear, and also just also the funding from Congress hasn't been as good as we had hoped. It's climbing its way up slowly, but certainly more revenue is needed from Congress to really dedicate addressing these needs in our parks, from wastewater systems and Great Smoky Mountains to the Loop Road at Yellowstone and bridges. For instance, there's one here in Washington, D.C. that needs to be addressed immediately.
These backlogs, and it's funny you mentioned the Loop Road. We go to Yellowstone once or twice every year, and it's always done. It's never been done. But how far back do these backlogs of maintenance go in our national parks?
Oh, that's a good question. I would say, you know, there's a lot of historic structures in our national parks. So I would say there's always been a need to address the maintenance of our parks. But this backlog is as high as it's been that I know of And it's just kind of gotten out of control in a way for the Park Service. And honestly, the Park Service is just within the last, 15 years or so have really understood what those maintenance needs are and the priority of them and so forth. So they have a better handle of what the needs are overall, the whole system. It's been a long time.
Now, I think most people don't realize how tight the budgets are at our national parks. They see the stories that come out about record number of visitors, increasing popularity at all the parks. But the reality is it not that their staff has been cut dramatically as well as their budgeting? Talk about that situation, if you will, for a moment.
Yeah, sure. And not to get into too much of the numbers, but there are some important numbers here. From 2011 to 2017, there was a 19% increase in visitation to our national parks, which is fantastic and great. But that does put wear and tear in our parks, and we want visitors to have great experiences in the national parks. But the staff levels have decreased by 11%. So the education that you get at the national parks from the park rangers and the maintenance staff, those types of positions aren't being filled as they used to be. So that's problematic. They can't do that day-to-day maintenance as was expected before. And just to give you a snapshot of where national parks are in the whole federal government entire budget system, in 1982, the Park Service was 1/8 of 1% of the federal budget. Now they're 1/14 of 1%. So you can get a sense of where the decrease and the priority is. There's a lot of priorities in this country and good ones, but it shows that national parks just aren't receiving the funding that they deserve.
Who do we blame for this? Is this a partisan issue, or is this Congress as a whole? Now, I know you guys are an advocacy group for the parks. Thank goodness groups like you are out there. But people have heard us so much over the last couple of years, pointing fingers at Washington, one side this, one side that. But is this partisan, or is this Congress as a whole?
Good question. NPCA is a nonpartisan organization, so we like to work with both sides of the aisle, and we have worked with both sides of the aisle. But ultimately, it's Congress in general. Democrats have been in charge, Republicans have been in charge, and also the administration plays a part in this too by sending up their recommendations to Congress on what they want. So it's, everybody loves our national parks. They want to do something good for our national parks. They have done some good things for our national parks. They did pass a centennial bill during the centennial year to provide some public-private partnership funding and establish an endowment. But it's all these little pieces that need to continue to happen. But what we really need is a dedicated funding source, and that's bipartisan. There's both sides of the aisle want to provide some dedicated funding to address our parks and the maintenance needs. So it's just how to get it done. There's as everybody has seen in the news, it's tough right now in Washington, D.C. So this is one area that we think that Congress can come together and find a solution during all of this difficult time here in D.C.
There was a lot of controversy last year when the decision to raise the fee for the senior pass, for example, the lifetime pass. Does that contribute much to this? I know we've raised it, I think, up to $80 from $10, but that's just nickels and dimes. We need more increases in different ways or different sources than that. What are some of the alternate source funding suggestions that are out there?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for the question. Yeah, fees are certainly part of the solution, but we don't want to price people out of our parks. What's great about that senior dollars going up for that lifetime pass is that matched with private dollars, so it's actually double the investment. The proposal that just came out from the administration a couple of months ago would only address very little of the deferred maintenance backlog, less than 1% actually. But it's all different sources of funding. There's transportation dollars through the transportation bill that provide funding to address some of those big projects for roads in our national parks, but it's not enough. So continuing to to plus that number up, but annual appropriations, every year Congress has to provide funding for our parks, so to increase the construction dollars there and the operating dollars is important. But also, as I mentioned, the dedicated funding. We need a robust infusion of money to address this backlog, or at least a big portion of it. So there's a proposal out there called the National Park Service Legacy Act. It's a bipartisan proposal, both on the House and the Senate side, that is getting a lot of interest from members of Congress. So we've been pushing that legislation or something similar to it that actually provides an infusion of funding dedicated to the national parks.
The issue is throughout the entire national park system, is it not? I mean, we have all you have to do is drive through some of the roads, drive to Zion, look at the crowds and the congestion and the wear and tear that popularity is causing. Can you help us visualize this a little bit more? Our audience is probably fairly familiar with national parks, but we sometimes get blind to the side issues of bad roads, sewer systems that may leak, not enough help. Help us see how this is showing itself in our national parks, this backlog that is not being addressed.
Sure. It's actually, the National Park Service is really great about covering up. They want people to have really great experiences in our national parks. So, for instance, there's a bridge called the Arlington Memorial Bridge here in Washington, D.C., and it looks great from the outside, but tour buses and the Secret Service can no longer go over that bridge because if they're too heavy. So you don't see necessarily the backlog needs, but there's an underlying issue there. The roads issues, they fill up the potholes in many of our national parks, but at the same time, the underlying substructure needs to be replaced, so there needs to be a complete overhaul. But like Great Smoky Mountains, the wastewater systems there, you know, a lot of people don't realize all the infrastructure that you can't see that needs to be addressed. So right now, it's okay, but if that were to burst or cause problems, then now you don't have restrooms for people that are visiting our national parks, or water out of water fountains and so forth. That would cause a huge disruption in our national parks, at Great Smoky Mountains in particular. So hopefully that visualization helps to understand what some of those issues are.
Well, we're going to refer our folks to you guys to at least for some background on this. But what can the average person do? Contact their representative, write letters. What's where can we help tilt that to get that funding restored or returned or added to make a difference? What can the average person do?
I really appreciate that question. Yeah, it seems to be the question and the answer is the same for many of our issues in our federal government is yes, it's the best way is to contact your member of Congress and tell them about your love for national parks and other federal lands and the importance of those for your visitation and for your history and your grandchildren and so forth. So we encourage you to reach out to your members of Congress and support things like the National Park Service Legacy Act and be as specific as possible. And also, you know, the annual appropriations for construction and operations for our national parks. And also, you know, we're always looking for pictures in our national, as you're visiting the national parks and you see an issue that's going on that we should highlight, we'd love to have those photos. So that could be helpful as well.
Well, we will all be out there. Most of our listening audience will be out visiting, most of them a national park or two this year. We will certainly link to the National Parks Conservation Association website. Emily, I want to thank you for making a little time available for us today on this issue. I hope that we can help people make a difference. And it ultimately all comes down to the people who represent us. And if they represent us, we just have to let them know how we feel. Emily, thank you so much for being our guest on the podcast this week.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Well, that's interesting. That's stuff we don't see. You know, we're always so focused on the wildlife and the beautiful sunsets and sunrises that we are unaware that underneath those roads and underneath those campgrounds, there's sewer systems that need to be replaced. Some of them very old.
That makes sense that more money has to go there.
Yeah. And I liked your idea about taking pictures. So as you're traveling out there, audience, and you see stuff that needs to be fixed or isn't the way it should be, you can send it to us, or you can just follow the link that we'll put with this interview at the show notes for this episode, which is roadtrekking.com/182.
I hope our listeners really will make an effort to take pictures and send it where it needs to be sent so that we can help make a difference so that these great national parks are there for our kids.
Our kids, our grandkids. Yeah, yep. We can make a difference, and let's get involved. Hey, the interview of the week is sponsored by our friends at Sunshine State RVs in Gainesville, Florida. There you will find the largest selection of used Class B RVs anywhere in North America. They also have a very full inventory of brand new Class Bs from Road Trek, from Coachman, and from other manufacturers. But if you're looking for a Class B RV, the first place you should check should be sunshinestaterVs.com or make a trip to sunny Gainesville, Florida. Their RVs include Road Trek, used RVs from Pleasure Way, Winnebago, Leisure Travel, and more. They have brand new Road Treks, a full lineup of them in stock. You will not find a wider selection of used RVs anywhere. And every RV they sell goes through a very thorough 172-point inspection. We've actually watched these guys as they've worked and restored, and that's almost what they do. They take these things almost to new condition. They make sure that all of the mechanical and manual systems are in top condition. Every RV they sell is road tested to make sure it runs and drives the way that it should. They go over the interior components just as entirely as they do the outside. Every component turned on and tested to make sure it works. And all of their used RVs thoroughly cleaned and detailed inside out. They can even check the roof for cracks and replace any silicone caulking. Now, something else that's neat. If you buy a new or a used Road Trek motorhome from Sunshine State RVs, and you're not in Florida, you find it online, you want to get it online, they will deliver it to your driveway anywhere in the U.S. You can check them out yourself at sunshinestaterVs.com.
Traveling with technology. It's time now for our RV Tech Tip of the Week.
Time to check in with our pal from Verizon Wireless, Steve Van Dinter.
Hi there, Mike. And congrats, everyone. We made it through the worst of winter. And as those spring plants start to peek out for the first time this year, we're also getting a sneak peek at some next-generation smartphones as well. Samsung recently announced its latest flagships, the Samsung Galaxy S9 and S9 Plus. With a quick glance, you may think you recognize these devices, but the truth is, there's much more than meets the eye. What is back is that incredibly beautiful and immersive infinity display stretching from side to side. And now you can add immersive virtual sound in there as well, with speakers that are 40% louder. And if you're looking to keep your music to yourself, just plug in a pair of headphones. Yes, a headphone jack is still included. One of the biggest innovations in this next-generation device comes in its cameras. Dual aperture on both devices means amazing low-light photos with even the smallest amount of light. And on the Galaxy S9 Plus, you get a dual camera on the back, allowing you to zoom in, and also preview background blurring with its live focus. And when you're ready to express yourself, the Galaxy S9 and S9 Plus have upped the emoji game with AR emojis. Simply let the phone take a picture of yourself, and it'll create an avatar that looks like you and expresses itself in real time the same as you. And when you're ready to message others, you can use your own emoji set to let the world know how you feel. Lastly, all of the conveniences you've known and loved over the years are still there as well. Water resistance, wireless charging, and Samsung Pay, to name a few. Pre-orders are going on right now, and you can reserve yours at VerizonWireless.com. The phones themselves launch on March 16th. With this week's Traveling Technology Tip, I'm Steve Van Dinter from Verizon.
It's amazing how these new phones, the Samsung Galaxy 9, the 9 Plus, as well as the Apple iPhone 10. The cameras that these phones have and the quality. So many people are now using them almost as regular DSL cameras. I know I have mine with me. I'm able to take many more photos, and the photos are just excellent quality. Well, wait till you see the new ones from the Galaxy S9 and the S9 Plus. As Steve says, that they'll be launching on March 16th. They're doing just pre-orders now. That's how popular these phones are. They take pre-orders. Hey, this part of the podcast brought to you by Verizon, which operates America's most reliable wireless network, more than 112 million retail connections nationwide. When Verizon says better matters, they mean it. Year after year, survey after survey, they rank highest in all of the leading network surveys for user satisfaction, network performance. Can your network say that? If you are stuck on the wrong network, head over to Verizon and get unstuck.
Time now for Off the Beaten Path,
a unique RV podcast travel suggestion you probably won't find in a guidebook. Here's Mike.
All right, our pal Tom and Patty Burkett have found a new one, this one in Indiana.
Hey, Mike and Jennifer. We were in Franklin, Indiana, and Rob Schiltz was waiting for us out of the rain beneath a marquee that dazzled with a half mile of neon and 1,000 chasing lamps. Shrek, it proclaimed, today at 2 and 7:30. Schiltz has been involved in Franklin Heritage, the local historic preservation group, for more than 20 years. When the Artcraft Theater came up for sale, he told us, I told the board that if we didn't buy it, we might as well pack up our tent and go home. With the ceiling falling in and the front wall falling toward the street under the weight of the rusting marquee, it was a much bigger challenge than the group had ever taken on. Now, more than a decade later, more than $2 million have been poured into the building with plans for a million more.
Kirk, the ticket booth man who daylights in the career office at Franklin College, sits in front of a bustling concession counter where a half dozen volunteers serve patrons from the vintage popcorn machine and candy counter. More neon graces the ceiling above them, as do mirrors that set off the hand-painted period signage for entrances, exits, and amenities. While I'm waiting in line for my popcorn, I'm greeted by a young woman. Hi, I'm Ashley. I'm one of the A-teens, and we have a souvenir booth over there. I bet you'd really like the Christmas tree ornaments we made from shredded up tickets. I hope you'll come over and see them when you're done. While I'm standing at the counter juggling popcorn, water, lemonade, coat, camera, and a Shrek cookie, the concessionaire asks, do you need help getting all this to your seat? Take out, she calls, and immediately a young man with a tray appears to assist me to my seat in the theater.
Like Ashley, everyone in the theater seems to be a volunteer, which contributes to the very reasonable admission and concession prices. Bolstering that are numerous show sponsors. The film this weekend is sponsored by Dr. John Schaefer and his dogs Josie and Jaden. There's a concession sponsor who gets to choose the candy of the week, a program sponsor, a sponsor for the short feature, and a prize sponsor who personally donated the prizes for the pre-show drawing. Yes, there's a pre-show prize drawing, but not before two high school actors appear on stage to provide a 30-second dramatic synopsis of the show for those with a short attention span. Out comes the prize hopper, full of ticket stubs, blue, our revered elders, yellow, our fragile youth, white, VIPs, and red, the rest of y'all out there. The donor volunteers beam from the aisle as winners receive prizes, a crown, a dragon, a Red Riding Hood book, clearly themed on tonight's show.
Mary, queen of the backstage, banters with Rob, the MC, about the prize drawing while the two actors wheel out an old-school blackboard with a map of the USA. Now, says Rob, a special prize for our visitors from farthest away. We're feeling pretty confident, being from far away Ohio, until we hear, what? Italy? Come on down! A student from Franklin College abashedly makes his way forward while the actors quickly spin the blackboard around to show a map of the world. And the prize? A certificate, a candle made out of earwax, and a jumbo tub of popcorn. Locally grown, reports the MC,
and internationally known,
chants back the audience. Before the curtain rises, the volunteers on stage and in the aisles take on a flight attendant pose as they point one by one to the exits, and each exit gets catcalls or applause. Exit number 5 is clearly the most popular.
Families and couples stream out of the theater toward the cafes, coffee shops, and boutiques that have gathered around the skirts of this grand old lady. After a quick visit to the gift shop, we stand again below the glorious marquee, and we appreciate the chance to spend time with some of the people across this country who believe in their hometowns and work hard to build communities that nurture hope, joy, and welcome. The neon casts its glow for blocks in every direction. If you look hard, you can just see it over there, off the beaten path.
Once again, the Burkitts have delivered us a wonderful portrait of small-town America, and I think there's a story like that in every town. Small-town pride, restoring an old building that would have been lost, and in this case, a movie theater. All you got to do is do like the Burkitts do. Just stop, spend some time, look around, ask some questions, and you'll find those great off-the-beaten-path reports that you'll be telling your friends about, too. Off the Beaten Path is sponsored every week by Steinbring Motor Coach, Road Trek's newest dealer and a third-generation family business. They're located in Garfield, Minnesota, which is the beautiful Chain of Lakes region, built on quality motorhomes. That's what their dealership is all about, and excellent pricing and service. They are just a terrific group of folks who have been in business as a family in the transportation business since 1917. They have gone to RVs over the last couple of decades, and the sales staff there at Steinbring has decades of experience. Along with being named a Blue Ribbon dealer, they're also a top 50 dealer named year after year. They have a beautiful indoor showroom, and they specialize in both Class A and Class B RVs. For Class A, they have the beautiful Newmar Class A motorhomes. For Class B, it's the Road Trek. And also on sale, pre-owned coaches from popular brands like Winnebago, Itasca, Tiffin, Fleetwood, Holiday Rambler, Monaco. They also have Class Cs. They have diesel pushers, gas, or toy haulers, anything that you want to find. You'll find your next RV at Steinbring Motor Coach. Along with award-winning sales, they have award-winning service as well. Steinbring Motor Coach, when you do head over there, please tell them that you heard about them on the RV Podcast.
What's happening? Time now to check the RV calendar of events and gatherings you need to know about.
Well, we love to talk about all of the great RV shows around North America, and it has been nonstop since January. We've got another big list of them for you that are opening this weekend. This show, of course, being released on March 7th, 2018, and here's what's coming up over the weekend. In Manitoba, it actually opens on March 8th and runs through Sunday the 11th. It's the Manitoba RV Show and Sale at the RPC Convention Center in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. In Michigan, in Port Huron, it's the Port Huron Camper and RV Show, March 8th through the 11th at the Blue Water Convention Center in Port Huron. In Sacramento, California, it is the Real RV Show, March 8th through the 11th at the Cal Expo in Sacramento. Out in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, it is the Sioux Empire Sportsman's Boat, Camping, and Vacation Show, March 8th through the 11th, that being held at the Sioux Falls Arena in Sioux Falls. Out in Halifax, Nova Scotia, Canada, it's the Atlantic Outdoor Sports and RV Show, March 9th through the 11th, being held at Exhibition Park in Halifax, Nova Scotia. Back into the States, Eastern Iowa Sports Show, held at the Unidome in Cedar Falls, Iowa, March 9th through the 11th. In Minot, North Dakota, it's the KX Sports Show, March 9th through the 11th at the North Dakota Fair Center. In Moncton, New Brunswick in Canada, Moncton, New Brunswick, it's the Moncton RV Show, March 9th through the 11th at the Moncton Coliseum Complex. In Belleville, Ontario, it's the Sportsman Boat and RV Show, March 9th through the 11th at the Quint Sports and Wellness Center in Belleville, Ontario. Rockfort RV Camping and Travel Show, March 9th through the 11th at the Indoor Sports Center in Loves Park, Illinois. Down in Virginia, the Virginia RV Show, Hampton. That's March 9th through the 11th at the Hampton Roads Convention Center in Hampton, Virginia. Back to the Midwest, Central Wisconsin RV Camping Show, held March through the 11th at the Central Wisconsin Convention and Expo Center in Wausau, Wisconsin. And finally, this weekend, out in Pennsylvania, York, Pennsylvania, it is the York RV Show, March 9th through the 11th at the York Expo Center. Links to all of these shows found on our show notes page for this episode. Just go to roadtrekking.com/182, scroll down to the RV calendar segment, and you can click and find out information on any of these RV shows.
Traveling and celebrating the RV lifestyle. This has been the RV Podcast with journalist Mike Wendlin. Got a question for the next episode? Just click the send voicemail link on the RVpodcast.com blog. Till then, we'll see you out there, somewhere off the beaten path.
All right, so ends this episode of the Road Trekking RV Podcast. And remember, if you'd like to have your voice heard and be a part, please leave us one of those voicemail messages. Just click that right-hand button on the roadtrekking.com website. Also, head on over to our YouTube channel. New videos released all the time. We've had two new videos out since the last time we talked to you. Just go to the RVLifestyleChannel.com. While you're there, you need to do two things. You need to subscribe and then click the little bell icon that you'll see when you subscribe. That means when we have new videos out, you'll be the first to know with a special notification. New episodes of this podcast are released every Wednesday, and we invite you to be a part of our mailing list as well. We send out, you know that, a special newsletter to subscribers. It goes out every Monday morning, absolutely free to your email inbox. You can learn about that from the roadtrekking.com website. On behalf of my wife, Jennifer, our dog, Bo, I'm Mike Wendland saying we'll see you out there, road trekking across North America. Bye-bye, everybody.